Good evening, Strong Stance listeners. You know, if it's felt lately like there has been a huge number of anti-trans bills proposed across the country, it's not your imagination, because there has. NCTE is currently tracking some 49 proposed and inactive bills in 19 states in the 2016 legislative session. And a vast majority of those laws affect transgender and gender nonconforming students. These are the bathroom and locker room bills you've likely heard about, that a student must use the restroom that matches their sex assigned at birth, or in some cases, their genitals. And then there's the bullying. According to the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, only 18 states in the District of Columbia have anti-bullying legislation that mentions sexual orientation and gender identity. Further, they report that only 13 states and D.C. have anti-discrimination laws that protect students based on both sexual orientation and gender identity. And then there's the 8 states with no promo homo laws. These are the states that have laws expressly forbidding teachers from discussing gay and trans issues in a positive light, if at all. Alabama's law, for instance, and this is a direct quote, says that classes must emphasize in a factual manner and from a public health perspective that homosexuality is not a lifestyle acceptable to the general public, and that homosexual conduct is a criminal offense under the laws of the state, end quote. Now, sandwiched between two of these no-promo homo states is Georgia, which can be a bit of a contradiction when considering the city of Atlanta with the rest of the state. But in that beacon of hope that is the ATL, there's an educational institution that's turning the usually traumatic experience of queer students on its head. And tonight, I'm honored to have the executive director of this amazing new school on the line, Christian Vilovitz. Christian is the executive director of Pride School Atlanta, has a BA in mathematics from Douglas College at Rutgers University, and an MED in creative arts and learning from Lesley University. He is a formerly heterosexual cisgender woman who is now a queer identified trans man with a wife and 2 children, one of whom is gender fluid. A GLSEN certified educational trainer, he has been providing cultural competency and personal growth workshops and panels for, by, and with educators, corporations, community organizations, youth, and families since he came out as queer in 1998. He is passionate about creating spaces where everyone is welcome, everyone can work, and everyone can learn, regardless of gender identity, gender expression, or affectual preference. Christian, I just want to thank you so very much for joining me tonight. How are you?
Oh, I am excellent. I am excellent. Thank you, Eli, for having me. It is an absolute pleasure to finally have an opportunity to sit down across the miles with you and do this.
Yeah. Before we get into the awesomeness that is Pride School Atlanta, I want to get to know a little bit more about Christian. So can you tell some of our listeners, like, what's your background? What has led you to this moment in your life? I know it's a loaded question and a very packed one. You don't have to give me your entire life history at once, but, you know, just something of, you know, what is your background? Where do you come from? How do you find yourself in this space?
You know, it's funny. It's such a great question. Like you said, it is a loaded question. And it's funny because it takes the whole path of who I am and what we're doing to create Pride School Atlanta and how it's all coming about. And it really boils down to angels and resources. my whole path has been, I have all these crystallized moments throughout my life that remind me that there's something working the universe, whatever it is, you know, whatever I believe in. I always thought there was something running the universe. I just didn't know what it was. I didn't have a religious upbringing, so it wasn't like the idea of God was forced on me in any particular way, even that my mom was raised in a Catholic family, but they are so not typically Catholic, and haven't really, there's no practicing Catholics in my family for the most part, on either side.
That's contrary to about half of my family, where we are all Sicilian Catholic.
Right. And it's funny that even came up, because I don't talk about that often. But when I was a kid, everybody else, my brother, everybody else, you know, like my mother and all her siblings, there's five of them all together. My father, I believe, his parents are Hungarian, Hungarian American. They all had religious training. And my parents stopped going to church when my brother had received communion. And then they never really went back. And he's 3 years older than me. And so I'd go to church with my grandmother on Sundays when we stayed at my grandma's house, or I'd go for Easter and Christmas. And I really didn't know the drill even. You know, I didn't even know the Lord's Prayer. I mean, that's how little I knew. And so I always felt like I missed out. But then the angel in my life, you know, when I came out for the first time after dating boys, and then I married somebody I went to high school with, and then we split up, and I came out on the tail end of that relationship when I was 27, I realized that it was a gift that I did not have a religious upbringing, because I didn't have to fight against that indoctrination and think that there was something wrong with me because, you know, because of my religion. And then, you know, and you fast forward a few years later, and when my grandmother died, it was the first time I'd been to a Catholic funeral, and they said, hey, all the practicing Catholics can come up and receive communion. And the only people who did was, I think, my one cousin out of about 10 cousins, and my grandmother's sister, who hadn't talked to her in 40 years. And she showed up at the funeral. And I was like, you know, God took care of me. as they say, God takes care of fools and drunks, you know. And so it's, and I blame the Catholic Church for my mom having a hard time with me coming out. And the truth was, my mom had a hard time with me coming out. It took me a while to get, you know, to get my mind around that. And so I've been a teacher since, basically, I signed up to become a teacher when I was 17 or 18 years old. I grew up in New Jersey, which is why I went to Rutgers. I always knew I wanted to be a math teacher. I don't know why. And when I was a straight teacher, my whole personal life was pretty obvious. I was, by the time I was teaching, I had been with my boyfriend for a year, my fiance. We got engaged, you know, we knew each other forever. I got engaged, I wore the rock on my finger. I identified as straight at the time, I think, even though I had attraction for women, but I couldn't put a finger on it really. So I get married, everybody comes to the wedding, no big deal. You know, we have this crazy relationship, you know, things start to bottom out. We move out to Washington, to Seattle, by his brother. And basically, things got worse. We split up. I stayed. He left. And then I got to start this happy journey of coming out without him around, which was a real blessing to me, because I didn't have to be wondering who was around town. But I knew as a teacher it was time to keep my mouth shut, because I was working in a school. I was married. I got divorced. I came out and started a new relationship with somebody soon enough after, within the space of 2 years. And so I was like, this is just weird for me too, you know, to be married, divorced, and now have this new partner with who has two kids of her own from her marriage. I somehow knew it became a don't ask, don't tell policy. And yet I had queer students in front of me, one of whom turned out to be trans, one who was gay, who thought I was a liberal straight person, until one day I was like, you know what, Aaron, I'll let you, you know, this kid's great. He's still in my life today. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll hold on. I got to talk to my girlfriend first. And then I'll be with you in a minute or whatever. And he came back to me and he said, when you said girlfriend, you meant girlfriend, didn't you? I said, yes, Aaron. And he said, he loves it when I tell this story. I said, he's like, oh, all along I thought you were just this liberal straight person. And I said, Aaron, where's your gaydar? I guess I hadn't butched out enough.
Right.
You know, I could still pull off the skirts and the, you know, suit or whatever, the business suit with the skirts.
Right. Right.
Once in a while, and I still had earrings, and my hair was short, but it wasn't so completely butch. And I just laugh because here I'm advocating for this out gay youth in my classes, yet I can't say, you know, as a lesbian, as a woman dating women, I need you to know that this behavior is unacceptable. Now, I had a student outside the high school one day say, aren't you that dyke teacher? And I turned to him like, yeah. But then I had the school resource officer escorted me out of the high school for several days until this kid disappeared. Because I'm like, you know, at least they saw what was going on.
Yeah.
But see, the great part is that one of the reasons I keep doing this is because when we're invisible, the kids who need to see us really can see us, but they have to look really hard, or they have to really know themselves. One girl was a senior. Turns out she was my friend's daughter. She didn't know the connection between me and her mom. And one day somebody said, they were talking about who are the queer teachers. And somebody said, well, what about Miss Z? And she said, and they said, oh, but she's married. And she said, so? And this was 1998.
Yeah.
And they were so savvy. And so this is 20 years ago almost, and the kids were already getting more savvy than we ever were. None of my teachers were out when I was a kid. There was two lesbian teachers who were couples. They were so normal. They were so heteronormative that nobody cared. But none of the PE teachers, none of the butch women were out. There were no out gay male teachers. If there were any, they certainly did. Oh, there was, the seventh grade, the junior high art teacher. He was flaming. but he never talked about being gay.
Right.
You know, he could have been bi, he could have been whatever. He might not have been queer, but he was pretty flaming.
Right.
But, you know, the jokes fly, and especially when I transitioned, I was like, oh boy, you know, I had actually decided to leave teaching before I even knew I was transitioning. And I only had to do a month of being Ms. Z in the classroom. And I'm so glad.
Okay.
And then a year, then I started testosterone. I got to be a limousine driver, and that was Angels and Resources. I was laying on my couch one day, and I knew I was planning on giving up my condo. I quit teaching, and all of a sudden, this limousine job. I was like, I need to do something. I've always wanted to drive. And I flip open the phone book, and I go into this one office, really a bunch of nuts. And she says, well, we're not hiring, but the limo company in the next building is. They share a lot together. And turns out she wouldn't hire women. They hired me on the spot. I heard this afterwards. I'm like, I already identified as male. I just laughed so hard.
Yeah,
but all the bits that come together of being, you know, around people who even if they don't understand you, they honor you, they respect you, they say, okay, what do you need me to put on your ID? And that's all there is to it, you know.
Yeah.
They've seen it all. Limousine people have seen it all. They, you know, I'm old hat to them. They just want to know what pronouns to tell people. And
Was this still in Seattle?
This was in Seattle. I worked for Seattle Magazine. It was a fabulous corporate company. I'd been around for 40 years, you know, best company in the area. And then I got a call to go back to work from a friend of mine who'd known me forever. She got the lay of the land and said, you know what, I think they agreed this could work out. There was like 10 queer teachers in the building out of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into that interview with two sets of papers. And I knew the job was practically mine. And if it worked out well, I was going to hand them my papers that had all my old names on it, too, and tell them I was trans.
Right.
Or not at all, right? Or hand them the ones that didn't. And when the interview went well, they said, you know, the job is yours. I said, well, I need you to know that I'm trans, really only because all of my recommendations say Christine on them.
Right.
And she... And my paperwork's going to show this former name. And all the good old boy from Texas, the Mormon from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and the other guys in the room just said, can you do the job? Are you ready to do the job? Are you just not going to have a nervous breakdown on us? I said, you know what? I've been doing this for 2 years. This is perfect timing. It couldn't get any better, and this job was written for me. And now I get looked at as I've been a man for like 5 minutes. And now other teachers look at me and say, we're so glad you're here, because they need a good male role model in their lives.
Right.
And Eli, as a butch woman, they never said, we're so glad you're here, because those baby dykes really need someone to look up to.
And they do, though.
And they do, because you know what? When I was working with those baby dykes that were in my classrooms, we had we kept an eye on them.
Right.
I kept an eye on them. I know I kept them out of a lot of trouble. They got enough on their own. But those 17-year-olds and the 18-year-olds that needed the really super butch and the one who had the boy haircut that I wanted, it's like, I follow these kids, and I always see them on Facebook 10 years later, almost 15 years later, and see how they've progressed in their gender presentation and who are their girlfriends. And it's just, it's a joy for me to serve my community, and it's really about relationship, and I think really good teaching is about relationship. And when you have to hedge what you say, just like when kids ask you, have you done drugs?
Right.
And you say, well, what do you mean by that? You know, when you hedge, have you ever been arrested? You know, but have you ever done drugs? Did you ever get pulled over for drunk driving? Whatever. They know. They're asking for a reason, because they're looking for help. And if you BS them, you've cut them off. And I think, and being a teacher who has a wife and a child and is about to have a child, kids have to make all these assumptions. Well, you have a wife and a kid. That means you're straight.
Right.
And therefore, I don't know, why are you telling me not to make faggot remarks?
Right.
I may not be gay, but some of my best friends are. I said, that's offensive to me, you know?
Yeah.
Well, why? Are you gay? No. But yes and no. I mean, I'm queer. My wife identifies as a femme, and that's kind of where we were when we got together. And I don't know what to call that. I was straight before. I don't identify as a straight woman, you know.
Right.
Some trans guys identify as straight. They date women. They identify as straight. It's just not how – it's not my community. I mean, people with children and queer folk and trans folk, those are my people, really.
Yeah, and I like how you listed the people with children first.
Yeah, because those are the people
Once
who are doing what
them.
I'm doing. That's
exactly.
the trench.
Yeah,
that's the
exactly.
trench I'm in right now. When I was transitioning, that was the trench I was in, and I needed those people. And then I got to give back when I was kind of on the other side. And then when we had kids, we were in a parent support group. We were in this PEPS group in Seattle. And the first time we showed up, we said, look, I'm trans. We're a queer couple. It's going to come out. If we're going to spend the next 10 years together, you guys need to know that. And they're like, totally cool. No problem. You know? And then all those different ways in which we have to find our people. And I think one of the biggest reasons we're doing Pride School is, if you may have seen our brochure, one of the first things I wrote is, where are my people? You never have to wonder, where are my people? When you're hanging out in the band hallway or the choir hallway. I didn't get to do that because I didn't take band or choir, and I didn't do drama because I didn't want to wear a dress on stage when I was in school.
Right.
You were not going to get me in a dress on stage and have all those people make fun of me.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind, I just wasn't going to do it. So there's things we miss out on. I don't want kids to have to miss out. I don't want to have to miss out.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, It's interesting that, you know, you are talking a lot about, like you said, like, where's my people? And I can imagine that that would buy and be why some of this stuff is so important to you. You know, are there other reasons? Like, why this hill to plant your flag in? Why is education in general? Like you said, you always wanted to be a teacher, but is there something about education, particularly education of queer youth, that just rings as so important to you? And what is that?
I think so much it's the mentoring aspect of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And watching the light come on in somebody's eyes.
Right.
Especially as a math teacher. I'm a math teacher. So I love teaching math and I love working with kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I hated the rest of the job after a while. And I realized that something's not right here. And I felt I was enabling a broken system, which
right.
is why I got out. I had a spiritual click one day. And I turned to my paper 2 days later. I said, I'm leaving in June. That was December. I said, I'm leaving in June.
Yeah.
And I always thought I'd last 15 years. And I don't know why. But I love giving kids a foundation. My teachers when I was in especially 6th and 7th grade gave me such an awesome foundation, especially in math, that mm-hmm. I want other kids to have the foundation I had. And the relationship too, I've always loved my teachers. I was always a teacher's kind of kid. So mm-hmm. I still had a relationship with my first grade teacher. My second grade teacher moved away. My third grade teacher died. My fourth grade teacher died, basically. My fifth grade teacher popped back up into my life about a year ago through Facebook. His name's Al Zinzi. He was this amazing person who had these amazing relationships with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And my sixth grade teacher, we all had amazing relationships with her. She brought us into her family. She brought
right.
her two-year-old to school. And so we all became family. And this mishmash group of kids from two different elementary schools, we got ours shut down and we had to move to this other one for sixth grade. And, you know, it could have been a disaster. And she made it gold. And I think that aspect of creating family at school, that you should feel good when you go to school.
Right.
That it shouldn't be a war zone. And I think seeing that most kids just need one person to talk to. If they have one, like, I didn't really talk real with a teacher until my Spanish teacher junior year in my new school. And I told her what craziness was going on in my home. And she got it. She was able to catch it. And she has still been one of my biggest mentors. My seventh grade teacher, my sixth grade teacher, God rest her soul, she passed away several years ago. Anybody will tell you she was the world's, you know, favorite teacher. My seventh
right.
grade teacher is still in my life today. She has always just, every time I go back to visit her, she'd say these amazing things about me and, you know, raise me up. And we all would go to Christmas dinner together at the local pizza joint, me and her and three of my friends, and we laughed. And the laughter, Eli, I think is really what keeps me coming, because mm-hmm. I get to laugh about math. I get to laugh about dating. And now being able to work with kids from queer families, you know, kids from queer and trans families, kids who are queer and trans, kids who are gender fabulous, kids who are just whatever is on their plate. So many kids with anxiety are popping out now.
Right.
All their parents say, they have social anxiety, they have this generalized anxiety. I'm like, honey, I don't know any kid or any queer or trans person especially who does not have anxiety. As I'm learning, I myself have anxiety. Oh,
right.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's almost like it comes with the territory.
It comes with the territory. I don't know. Who's going to beat me up today?
Yeah, and you it sounds like you, as a student, had a great support network in some of your teachers, you know, but is bullying something that you or your children have had to deal with, like, personally? Like, do you think that you turned to Pride School? Like, you mentioned something about the broken system, and we are going to get into the details about Pride School in just a minute, but, like, do you think that this is something that you wanted to do because you wanted to provide the kind of support that you had teachers provide for you? Or did you face a lot of bullying? Did your children face a lot of bullying where you were like, we have to change something about this? Like, or was it some kind of combination of those as a driving force?
You know, it's interesting. I had experienced some bullying. I don't even know what it was related to anymore. It could have been anything, but I never talked to anybody about it.
Right.
You know, like I was playing girls basketball, and some of my teammates started to get on my case, and they were all dysfunctional in their own special ways. Most of us were affected by alcoholism, whether our own or somebody else's. Some of it was just you know, we're running. It turns out I had asthma, and I couldn't keep up with the team, and so they'd have to run because I had untreated asthma. Whatever the reason, one of the biggest things is that kind of stuff happened and I never told anybody. I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell my best friends even because they weren't on the team with me anymore. I was embarrassed by it. And so I kept my mouth shut. And I think those little things alone that happened behind closed doors in the locker room when nobody's looking, knowing that stuff, and seeing what an impact positive relationships have on teens especially, and on gender-diverse youth, you know, quote-unquote gender nonconforming kids, who, especially boys, the pink boys. If they have somebody who has their back, they can actually make it through. If they have much more than one person, because there's got to be somebody in the hallways, there's got to be someone in the locker room, there's got to be somebody around the bathrooms. And one trusted adult, my wife says this especially because she's done some work with Planned Parenthood, you may not be able to tell your mom, but you may be able to tell your aunt or uncle or your teacher. And if you can tell one trusted adult what's going on in your life, you can save your own life and somebody else's in the process, because if your best friend's suicidal, you got to tell somebody, right? And you look at all our kids from queer and trans families who are bullied because of who their parents are, who their siblings are, kids who are bullied because people think that they're gay, and because of their weight, whatever it is, I think that so many of them suffer in silence. And not until it's too late, when they're cutting and doing drugs and isolated and, you know, on antidepressants and, you know, in treatment, you know, hoping to stay alive, does something get done where they can actually let somebody in. And and that's, I think, the one of the biggest parts of that brokenness of yeah, we can't educate everybody in a 30, 60 person school.
Right.
But we can actually bring members of the community into the school so that they can mentor our kids. They're all there. There's thousands of seniors who can actually come and mentor our youth. There's thousands of people with no children who can come and mentor our youth. And one of the biggest reasons I've stayed in this line of work is because little bits and pieces happen along the way. And I will tell you, when I came out as trans, I wasn't very open about it. I was scared to death, and I didn't know what to tell people. And my mother cut off contact with me for 6 months, my mother and father, because they didn't know what to tell people.
Yeah.
And I ran into former students, and I acted like I didn't know them.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to tell them, because I was afraid of what they'd say. I was afraid they were going to out me to the rest of the world. Now, these were the nicest kids that I adored. And one guy held the door open for me at Starbucks, and I walked right by him. I had been growing a beard. I didn't want to explain myself. I just wanted a cup of coffee.
Right.
And this other young woman looked at me. She's working the deli counter at the grocery store down the street. I was like, oh, man, Heather wants something from the deli. Now I got to do this. And she looked at me. You know, it's like, you don't want to talk to the cable company because they're going to misgender you. And you don't want to talk to the phone company, you know, anybody over the phone. But she looked at me and she said, do you have a sister who's a math teacher? And I paused, and I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. Tell me your name, and I'll tell her you said hello. Now, Eli, look at the difference 10 years has made.
Of course.
And now, one of the reasons I out myself so quickly with people doing this work is because they look at me and they go, wait a minute, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You have a wife and two kids. Why do you care what the LGBT community wants?
Right.
And I learned very quickly to just turn them and go, actually, I'm a queer-identified trans man.
Mm-hmm.
Now can we talk? Like, I have to justify, well, I'm not homeless, but I stand up for homeless people.
Yeah.
I'm not black, but I, you know, I believe that black students have a right to a great education.
Right.
I don't have to be homeless to help the homeless, but this idea that I have to be queer to help the queer community still strikes me.
Well, when it comes to the queer communities and the way that I believe that cis straight people very often, especially those that don't have any family members or close friends that are queer, is it's still that guilt by association. Like you said, why would you do this? Because you know that people are going to assume that you're gay. Why are you doing this unless you are gay or unless you are trans?
No. And then we can fire your butt.
Right. Exactly.
Because guilt by association. Well, in this state, you know, if you're not gay, well, then you're standing up for gay people and we're going to fire you anyway because it's a right to work state.
Right. Of course. Yeah. So let's talk about Pride School Atlanta.
Sure.
So what for those of us, and if you're living in the Atlanta area and you haven't heard of Pride School Atlanta, no offense, but I believe you might have been under a rock for the last little bit. but we'll get to some of the publicity that you have had on this for a while, but can you tell our listeners what is the mission of Pride School Atlanta? What is it? What does it mean to you? What is the purpose of what you are trying to do?
Well, that's a great question. I will tell you, I wrote the mission statement for Pride School Atlanta the very first night I thought about this school. And this school came out of a desire to have a school where queer and trans and allied educators can freely teach queer and trans and allied youth and families without hedging who they are, who they've been, or who they plan to become, and who their family members are, and who their loved ones are. And the great part is that the person who had told me, I'm not comfortable with you being out as trans, said, and I said, look, my dream school is to do this. And she said, why don't you start that school? And the mission was born that night. And the mission of Pride School Atlanta, I mean, when you take it from somebody who just started their dream school, who was told, why don't you quit trying to fix other people's schools and start your own?
Right.
And she did. And she started with like 8 kids and 3 of them were her own.
No.
And now it has 65 people or something like that. And they're in their 4th year. Mm. The mission of Pride School Atlanta is to create a community, a forever growing community of LGBT, queer, questioning, intersex, asexual, and allied students, educators, and families, where every family is welcome and every educator may teach so that every student may learn.
Great. That's awesome.
And that's really the mission. And the gift is that we have become threefold because I think the hidden mission is that we want to be Googleable.
Right.
The other part of our mission, and that's why the name Pride School was the first name that came to mind for me, and it stuck. And we call it Pride School Atlanta because we want, this is Atlanta. Now, what about the other 200 sites we can have across the country and around the world? Because we think these schools belong everywhere until there's not a need for them.
Okay.
And we are a nonprofit school. We're here to just make a decent salary and support the community. And when we say allies, we mean anybody. Anybody
right.
who wants to hang with really cool people and get a great individualized education that's based, it's almost like college for kids, where you actually have choice. It's a democratic free school. It's the model we've chosen for our campus, if you will, where you decide where you're at in your learning and what drives your learning and what do you need to catch up on? You know, what do you want to catch up on? Where are you? And so many of our kids have lost school. They've lost years of schooling because of bullying. It's a school for anybody who's sick of having a target on their back or doesn't want to put one there in the first place on themselves or on their kids. And we have so many kids, like I said, who have anxiety, who have lost time from school due to their anxiety issues and due to PTSD and due to the bullying and due to having to move schools because of bullying and because of discriminatory practices. And so the first thing parents ask is, well, they're 15, but they're kind of 3 years behind. I say, there's no such thing. You know, there's really no such thing as behind. There are people who are 65 who can't read and write.
Right.
They're ahead of the curve. You know, these kids can all read and write. And I will share with you that the biggest reason that we do the media work, the biggest reasons is really two. One is to find donors, but the biggest reason is to find families. And
because the families
so that
know that
every
you're out
family.
There.
Yeah.
Right.
And so when the moment we formed, the Georgia Voice found us. We got in a little blurb. We actually got our first article in the Georgia Voice in, I think, June of 2014.
Mm.
LGBT youth in Atlanta art issue. And one by one by one, we've hit all the news organizations around the area. And
and not just around the area. Like, news of this
all around the world
has been covered by
all
The Advocate,
the
MTV, LA Times, among
Perez
many
Hilton.
Others.
Perez Hilton picked up the story.
Perez Hilton. I had a feeling that you were going to bring up Perez Hilton. But, yeah, like, all of these national and local news sources, like, does this feel a little surreal?
I knew the bubble was going to pop, and I didn't know when, and I didn't know how, and I didn't know where. And I swear to you, just as we sat back and said, you know, we were going to try to launch in January. We really don't have any money. We don't have any students. Educators come out of the woodwork every time we have a showing, and they go, oh, my God, please can I work for you?
Right.
And then we had two interested families. And I could just have 5,000 students for all the educators that want to work for us.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because when I first heard about Pride School, right, and I started looking at it, anytime you hear, and I would venture to guess that a majority of the people that hear about what you're doing, the first thought in their head, if they agree with what you're doing, is, God, what a great place for these kids to be able to grow up, you know, in an accepting and loving environment without being surrounded by the bullying that can come from being different in that way. Or if they have maybe even a parent that is queer, they don't have to worry about other kids teasing them. What is secondary that I think is just as important is what a great place for queer educators to be able to go and be able to teach and pass on their knowledge and their experience, not only of textbooks, but of life, and to not be worried that any minute somebody's going to say something or somebody's going to find out or you're going to get spotted in a grocery store by one of your parents, you know, and have to explain that this is my sister or this is my brother or, oh, no, this is just a friend or whatever the case may be, and play the pronoun game constantly. Years upon years, I knew educators that now knowing that they are identified as usually gay or lesbian, and all those years that I wondered because I, in high school, identified as a lesbian and was really kind of isolated in a very, very large high school in Alabama, you know, I wondered which ones were the ones, and when they play the pronoun game, I was like, man, I've played this game, and I'm a professional, and I really think we're playing for the same team here. So can we really talk? But you can't approach an educator like that, and an educator, especially in the South, can't approach a student like that without running the risk of losing a job and upsetting a parent. So I just think it's interesting that you know, it was something that, you know, I was doing all this reading about Pride School, you know, when you and I first started talking about it, and I was just, it was like a light bulb that was like, well, duh, I know that. But it just kind of hit me how this is not just about the students. This is about the teachers as well, and better teachers are going to be better for the students anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. And this, I will tell you, as you know, this is not a new idea to have
right.
a queer-affirming school. About 7 years ago, right after my daughter was born, there's a gentleman who's actually Jewish and not queer-identified, but he gets it, who's mm-hmm. tried to start, his name is Dave Glick, and he tried to start in Minneapolis this GLBTQ online highschool.com.
Okay.
A queer-affirming, LGBT-affirming online school for kids from all over the world or all over the country who wanted to complete their education. It's because so many are homeschooled, right?
Right.
Because they got sick of the drama. They couldn't do it anymore. They're too anxious. Whatever, right? They gave up on the system. And unfortunately, it never fully launched, but I got to apply to this school, and filling out the job application was a spiritual experience.
Right.
Because the first thing it said was, what is your name? What are your pronoun preferences? How do you identify? And it gave a list of 12. How do you identify? I gave another list of 12 and other. Both of them said 12 and other. You know, gender identity, sexual orientation, if you choose to answer these questions, you know. It had the word cisgender on it. And, I mean, have you ever seen a job application with the word cisgender on it?
No.
Right. And so our job application, I've stayed in touch with him, and the school ended up being mothballed because it's not accredited yet, and you have to have 2 years to get accredited, but you can't get students without being accredited, da-da-da-da-da. But it changed my life.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you, I went from going, well, you know, I got to get home to my kid, to here are the 12 different things I could do for this community.
Right.
And you know, if you saw the list of people that he chose to hire, it was all the heavy-duty activists and Lincoln, I think, who's the attorney or whatever, and CJ that was with GLSEN or something in D.C., was like student, I forget, CJ who was genderqueer, and these mm-hmm. other people, just rock stars, you know? And I was just like, okay, we're doing this. Now it's our turn.
Right. Yeah.
And I absolutely. Believe in doing ages 5 to 18 because we had parents come to us with their four-year-old, and my four-year-old, by the way, as I said, being gender fluid, was born with one name and prefers this feminine name some or most of the time now, and we actually ended up going back to that original little private school so that we didn't have to deal with the bathroom issue at the local elementary school, which they said, well, okay, fine, he can use whatever bathroom he wants, but we'll deal with the bathroom when he's older. And I was like,
You know it's coming. Yeah.
You know, and the horse you rode in on, we're not staying for that. It
right.
was a nice attempt, but now we have kids who are 8 years old out in Gwinnett County
right.
and other Cherokee County, Cobb County, Clayton County, who are being, they're losing their recess because they're using the bathroom with which they identify. They're getting detention. They're being threatened to be suspended
right.
because that 8-year-olds are using the bathroom. And the gift, Eli, is that this all has come to me because we're searchable. Because
right.
when you Google LGBT, like Youth Atlanta or LGBT, you know, whatever, you find us.
Right.
And people reach out to us. So we've become really, we formed a nonprofit, Pride School Atlanta Incorporated, knowing we would be doing more than a school. But so we educate, connect, and support. We educate people out in the community. We've done all kinds of trainings, even including the Urban League. We got invited by the State Department to talk to a South Asian delegation about our work in the interest of advancing human rights. That was amazing. We sat on a panel with WPATH, addressing their medical providers who had come in for the training in Atlanta. My 7-year-old sat on a panel with the WPATH board.
Nice.
Which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, for those who don't know. And
right.
it's a worldwide organization with very few trans people on it, But Jameson Green, who is a trans man, who is one of my idols, is the outgoing president. And I got to, like, my kid sat next to Jameson Green, you know?
Right.
And I'm practically alive because of Jameson Green, because of his Becoming a Visible Man book and his showing up at trans conferences. And there's a great PDF somewhere, and it might be from Glisten, it might be from one of the trans, like, trans student educational resources or something, that says trans visibility saves lives.
Yeah.
And when I look at even, I went to the fear, that young man I talked to you about that's gay, his older cousin was a trans woman, and she took her own life because the support wasn't quite there. The therapists weren't quite right. And so she's surrounded by love and support. She was at one of the women's colleges, and she still died at 21. Or 23.
Yeah.
And then Blake Brockington. And when I learned about him, I said, Homecoming King takes his own life. Well, guess what? He read the comments. He talked about how reading the comments on the beautiful positive story he was having was one of the things that held him down. He said, how can I live in this world where adults say such horrible things about me?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've very unfortunately had to, you know, used to, I didn't read the comments because they made me a little nuts. Now I don't read the comments because, you know, they don't just take, like, people get nasty. They don't just take shots at trans people in general. They don't just take shots at me as a person. They started taking shots at my wife, you know, and there were things
right.
like, I can't read those comments.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you know, you talk about the fact that y'all are, you know, educating and doing all that. This makes so much more sense. There's this beautiful sentence that is on your website. I saw it on the donation page. It's probably somewhere else as well. And I absolutely loved it. And I jotted it down to talk to you about it. And it's so funny because now I'm looking at it and I'm going, he has so answered this. But it says, we are so much more than a school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was going to ask you what you meant by that. And after everything that you've said, I think that you've kind of answered that. Like, y'all are doing so much more than educating children from 5 to 18.
Right. And it's so beautiful because it's doing the work that I love to do.
Right.
It's connecting families with each other. So, you know, one of the first people to reach out says, my 10-year-old got suspended today for using the boys' room at school.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, where do you live? And she tells me where they live. And I say, okay, I'm going to connect you with this mom of a trans kid who lives down the road a piece from you, and she's going to tell you how to handle it. And I'm going to connect you with TYFA, the Trans Youth Family Allies, which
right.
is imatyfia.org, and with the Georgia Safe Schools Coalition, and with the PFLAG meetings that happen down your way, and connect you with these other parents of trans youth so that you have other families like yours and other parents who are formidable. And these mm-hmm. are rock stars in the community here. And there's enough parents of trans youth down on the south side to form their own school. There's enough parents out in Gwinnett and Cobb County and out there to form their own school now. And they're all connected on Facebook Messenger, partially because of me. Because
yeah.
I wasn't willing to take no for an answer. And I think, and the kids have met each other. And I've gotten to work with Emma Grace that was on the front page of the paper with me. We've been working together for 6 months now, I think. And she has gone from this bullied kid to this shining beacon of hope who laughs. I got to meet, okay, so we did our fundraiser on Saturday night with Pale Clear, Bucky Motter, Jed Drummond, and Chris Hines.
Mm-hmm.
And this amazing, amazing group of people, over 100 people showed up. And Emma's nana showed up. Her grandma showed up. And she said, I just have to tell you, you are doing so much for my granddaughter than anybody ever has. And to be able to catch that and say thank you for the acknowledgement.
Right.
And she's the one who reached out to me, and I said, oh, I can't work with the high school kids yet. I'm not ready. And she said, she emailed me a second time and said, is there even a small thing I can do to help with Pride School then? Now, this the kid has been on the front page of Yahoo.com. And wearing the T-shirt that she designed. And connecting educators with each other. We all just have potlucks. We just, you know, we just hung out at my house a few times. They come to events. Getting the queer and trans educators together in a way that they've never come together before. Getting the queer and trans kids together in a way they've never come together before. The parents together in ways they've never come together before. And now this other organization, after Southern Comfort left, THEA formed, which is the Trans Health and Educational Alliance. If you love a trans person or a gender fabulous person, then come join us, is what Lisa Rahman said. And so we all partnered together, and we've created this, working with these super moms, Eli, and now I have extra moms, you know, because my mom's been amazing. My dad doesn't use pronouns around me, you know, but my mom's been amazing. The rest of my extended family's been amazing, even my tattooed biker brother and, you know, of course, my godmother. And I want everybody to have that family. And we see Pride School as a family. And that's why I'm so grateful that are you family means are you gay? Are you queer?
This is an amazing school. So let's talk shops. Opening day, application process. What does this look like? Are applications still open for when y'all are going to open? When are you going to actually, like, when's the first semester or the first term? You know, what does this look like for you?
Excellent question. So if people are interested in applying, we do have open slots. We have about 15 slots available for this first year. We are open to taking part-time and full-time students, ages 5 to 18. If they go to our website, prideschoolatlanta.org, that's prideschoolatlanta.org, they can click on Apply Now, and they can download our most current brochure and an application. There's an application for students to fill out to share what their perspective is on themselves and one for their parents as well. And as many parental units as they want to fill out the application, the long questions, they're more than welcome to have as many people fill it out, so that we get a clear picture as to who they are. We are most likely going to roll with the DeKalb County schedule for our calendar year. So school would start on or about August 9th. I'm guessing we'll have a few days leading in where, you know, it's one big party and we'll start to get to know each other. And as a democratic model, you know, I'm sure we're going to have a big opening bash at the beginning of August or slightly after we launch. We certainly have more events coming up over the next several weeks and the next several months. We'll be having some more parent information meetings, teacher information meetings, volunteer information meetings. I just talked to somebody today who works for Cirque du Soleil. He's a choreographer. He said, I want to teach dance to your students. So we'll be doing some dance. I've met these lovely chefs that are going to put on some cooking classes, and part-time homeschoolers are welcome to apply, as well as full-time students. Tuition is set right now at $13,500, and that really is just to cover our expenses. But every day we have people sending us money to help offset our costs. So anybody who can even afford $10 a month, if every person who believes in what we're doing can afford $10 a month, that's two cups of coffee, to donate to our efforts, we can make our school accessible to every student and actually pay our teachers what they're worth. We have tons of people who want to volunteer for us, which offsets a good $150,000 in salary costs. We have a storage unit full of about $10,000 worth of donated equipment and books and furniture. And we're a democratic school, so a lot of the decision-making is going to happen once we get together as a school of how we're going to spend the rest of our money. But right now, we just got approved from the county with our plans to open at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Atlanta, which is the UUCA.org, if you'd like to see their building. We're renting 3 rooms from them for a very small amount, and we'll have access to their social hall and the playground, which is currently being remodeled. Beautiful space. It's the first integrated church in Atlanta from 1968, and it was my first choice, and it's a very LGBT-affirming church. So So you walk in and everything says, everybody's welcome here. Everything says everybody's welcome here. So it's the perfect place for us. And there's lots of queer affirming churches, queer and trans affirming churches all around the area, which is great. So we'll have different faith communities to draw from as far as our students go too, which is cool. So they should watch our Facebook page. They can follow us on Facebook, Pride School Atlanta, on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Pinterest. It's Pride School ATL. And I'm just starting a podcast now too called QED, capital Q, capital E, lowercase d, Queer Education. Of course, it has many things, but I'll be interviewing different people around the community and around the country and around the world, just kind of like Eli's doing tonight. So I told, like I said, I told you, you're next for me. And just today or yesterday, we got on Australian TV on sbs.com.au on the feed. And if you look up March 23rd, I'll be able to post the YouTube link soon enough. Oh, and I'll tell you one last thing. We got a letter in the mail from Sycamore High School in Cincinnati, Ohio yesterday. I'm giving these guys a shout out. They're GSTA, Gay Straight Trans Alliance, wrote us a letter, handwritten letter, and said, we love what you're doing. We've raised $136 with a bake sale, and we want to send it to you all. And we want to know more about your school and what you're teaching, and thank you. And I interviewed with a gal from Eureka High School in Eureka, Ohio, who wanted to know what we thought about, what I thought about gender-neutral bathrooms and such. And their high school is doing what we want to do. They're relatively queer and trans-affirming. They commandeered bathrooms from the staff so that they could have all-gender restrooms. Still no gay kids. I want a school where gay boys can hold hands.
Yeah.
And not just two of them.
Right.
You know, that's what you know, I think that's the goal in the long run. When boys can make out the way boys and girls make out, you know, when they can kiss each other goodbye in the hall and give that peck on the lips or whatever like boys and girls do, when they can hold hands without harassment anywhere around town, whatever, in the locker room and stuff, then I think we've made a difference. And the thing I didn't say, Eli, is that all the bathrooms are gender neutral in our school. Nobody has to claim any space in order to be able to pee in peace. And everybody's welcome at our school. Everybody. You know?
So for all of our listeners, you really do need to go check out this website. It's a great website. It gives tons of information about not only how you can donate, but also information on how to contact Christian. It also has, you know, the application forms and things like that. So as Christian said, that is www.prideschoolatlanta.org. Go on over to their Facebook page and like it. You'll be able to keep up with all of the events and fundraisers or anything else that's going on. And so, you know, Christian, I swear I could talk to you about this for days. Education has been something that's been pretty near and dear to my heart. When I was in college, I co-founded the Safe Zone program at the University of Alabama. And, you know, those kind of educational opportunities are something that I love. So I would love to pick your brain about that. But as I do with most of my interview type styles, before I say goodnight to everyone, you as our guest, I would like to give you the last word. So if there's anything that you would like to tell all of our listeners out there, either some words of wisdom or encouragement or hope, this is your moment for our last word.
I would say if you even slightly relate to some of what we're doing here and you believe in what we're doing and you have even $50 that you can part with this year, please donate it to us so that you can see the work that $50, that $10 a month will save a life. And you are saving lives. And if you watch any of our interviews, read any of the stories, and if you want to see more evidence and you want to see our budget, or if you want to donate big, we'll take big donations too because we're a nonprofit. And we'd love to have you join our family no matter where you are in the world. And it is an honor to bear witness to people's stories throughout this work that we do. And they've all touched my life and the lives of my wife and my children, too. And you're saving my kids' lives by doing what you're doing up there. And I admire everyone for still being on this planet, and in spite of the challenges that so many of us face. And to all you parents out there who are worried about your kids, send them to us and we'll take care of them. And if you're worried about them being queer or trans, we'll hook you up with other parents who have a hard time with it too, and they'll help you walk through your worst fears. And so if you want to join us, please shoot us an email. You can even text Pride School ATL to 42828 and send us your email and join our constant contact list.
Kristen, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, for sitting down with me and taking time out of your busy schedule. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing, you know, your vision and your mission and your passion with all of our listeners. For our listeners tonight, thank you for hanging with us for another great episode, learning about all the people in our amazingly varied and diverse community. And we will talk again next month. Have a great night.
Thank you, Eli.
Absolutely. Thank you.